You can take this book. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Chandra Vallabha Girivari Dhari Jaya Gopi Chandra Vallabha Girivari Dhari Yashoda Nandana, Bhujjana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana, Bhujjana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vana Chari Yamuna Tira Vana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Jai Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai Shri Jagannath Shri Baladev Shri Mati Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Dinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachanine Nirvisesha Shunyavani Pastaja Deshtatanine. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, the prayers of Lord Brahma, prayers, and we are on text 43 and 44. So we will recite verse 44 responsively. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 44, please repeat. Kim kim na vismaranti ha. Kim kim na vismaranti ha. Maya mohita chetasa. Maya mohita chetasa. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Abhikshnam vismritatmakam. Abhikshnam vismritatmakam. Kim kim na vismaranti ha. Maya mohita chetasa. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Abhikshnam vismritatmakam. Please chant. Kim kim na vismaranti ha. Maya mohita chaitasa. Mohita chaitasa. Abhichnam vismitatmakam. Kim kim na vismarantiha. Maya mohita chaitasa. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Abhikshnam vismitatmakam. Kim kim na vismarantiha. Maya mohita chaitasa. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Abhikshnam vismritatmakam. Bhakti and Emily, do you want to try? Kim kim na vismarantiha. Maya mohita chetasa. Yan mohitam jagat sarvam. Abhikshnam vismritatmakam. Word for word synonyms, please repeat. Kim kim. What indeed? Na vismaranti. Persons do not forget. Eha. In this world. Maya mohita. Bewildered by illusion. Chaitasa. Whose minds, yat, by which, mohitam, bewildered, jagat, the world, sarvam, entire abhikshnam constantly. Vismitta atmakam, making one forget even one's own self. So we'll read the translations for texts 43 and 44, and then read the purport for 44. So up to 43. O King, who's speaking here? Yes, Sukadeva is now speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. O King, although the boys had passed an entire year apart from the Lord of their lives, they had been covered by Lord Krishna's illusory potency, and thus considered that year merely half a moment. Text 44. What indeed is not forgotten by those whose minds are bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency? By that power of Maya, this entire universe remains in perpetual bewilderment. And in this atmosphere of forgetfulness, no one can understand his own identity. Purport. It is clearly stated here that the entire universe is bewildered. Thus, even great demigods like Indra and Brahma are not exempt from the principle of forgetfulness. Since Lord Krishna exercised his internal illusory potency over his cowherd boyfriends and calves, it is not at all astonishing that for 1 year they could not remember their position. Indeed, by the Lord's external illusory potency, the conditioned souls forget their existence, not only for 1 year, but for many billions and billions of years, as they transmigrate throughout the kingdom of ignorance called the material world. End of the purport. Coming up back up to text 43 here, there's one interesting phenomenon that is happening. It is said that the boys, actually 1 year had passed, and they felt like it was only a moment. This seems to be very different from what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his Shikshashtaka. It says that the boys were separated for 1 year. They were apart from the Lord of their lives. Lord of the life means you can't live without that person. They virtually are your prana. So the boys were apart from the Lord of their lives for a whole year. But it just felt like a fraction of a moment. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expresses like a very different mood. Yugayatam nimishena. When I'm separated from the Lord of my life, he's speaking in the mood of Radharani. Yugayatam nimishena. When I'm separated from the Lord of my life for one fraction of a moment, that one fraction of a moment seems like an entire millennium. So, how is it that in separation from the Lord of our life, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching that separation is unbearable. It's so painful that if we're even separated for a microsecond from the Lord of our life, it will seem like a millennium. And here, the boys were separated from the Lord of their life for a whole year, and it just seemed like a microsecond. So how are we to understand this seeming opposing moods? So it is indeed a fact that when one is madly in love with another, so much so that that person is your life, that it's not possible to tolerate separation from them. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't have love for God. Don't accuse me of having love for God. The proof that I don't have love for Krishna is that I'm still alive. If I actually loved Krishna, I wouldn't even be able to maintain this body without his presence. So that's proof positive that I don't really have love for God. I'm just a pretender. But yet we're seeing that the boys are separated for an entire year, and generally we say time flies when you're having fun. So generally, when we're with somebody, the object of our love, time just flies by. And we're with them for maybe a whole year, and it seems like we're only with them for a moment. So the important point in this verse, or in this whole Leela, is that Lord Brahma, with his Aishvarya Bhav, you know, he's in the mood of, I'm the controller, I've got all these opulences that I can wield, all these potencies. He thought, I will cause difficulty. I will kidnap the boys. I will kidnap the calves. Krishna's going to cry that my boyfriends and calves are gone. And the boys themselves will also be feeling so much distress. And then I'll come in and I'll save the day, and I will show off. Yes, just see how you were all so controlled by me. My powers were able to put you in such a predicament. If in fact the boys had been taken away for a year, they wouldn't even be able to live, even if they were taken away for a moment. But Krishna said, no, 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 no. You are not going to disrupt my Leela with my boyfriends. You're not going to cause any difficulty here. My illusory power, Yoga Maya, my Antaranga Shakti, my Sarup Shakti, internal Shakti, is way more powerful than your little magical tricks. So you can go ahead and take my Gopa friends, my Sakas, away for a year, but my illusory energy will make them not even notice that a year has gone by. There will be no distress on the part of my Sakas. They will think I was gone for a moment. So this is the purpose of Krishna's internal illusory potency. He has his Atmamaya. Atmamaya means his own illusory potency. And it functions in two ways, in two divisions. The Antaranga Shakti, or Yoga Maya, acts to enhance and embellish the pastimes of the Lord, to increase his happiness, and particularly to increase the happiness of his devotees. Because Krishna is happy when his devotees are happy. And the second aspect of his Atmamaya is called the Bahiranga Shakti, or the Mahamaya, which acts externally to keep people away, like a wall, a security wall that's been put up to keep people away from interfering with his Leela, with his friends and lovers. So Krishna's yoga maya potency was acting in this Leela to not cause any distress to his sakas and to instead increase their pleasure. Therefore, they felt a year to be no more than a second. Then Shukadeva Goswami comments in the next verse that what to speak of the sakas of Krishna being influenced by Krishna's maya, illusory potency, then what to speak of ordinary conditioned souls? What is there that a conditioned soul will not forget when they're under the influence of the illusory potency of the Lord? They are in the entire universe, a Brahma Bhuvanal Loka, from the very lowest being to the very highest being, from the very lowest planet to the very highest planet. The entire universe is perpetually bewildered. Perpetual means it just keeps going. There's no end. There's no end in sight. You can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's forever. So the difficulty that we have is that we don't believe or accept that I'm under the illusory potency. And therefore we, like Lord Brahma, try to display some Aishvarya Bhav. You know, I'm in control. Either I'm in control of my own life, I'm in control of my family, or my business, or my nation, or an international organization, whatever it is. Brahma, I'm in charge of the entire universe. Because we don't actually accept that we're under control. But Krishna, you know, giving the ABC lessons to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he very clearly tells Arjuna in the 7th chapter, text 13, that Chibir Guna Mayar Bhavar Eke, Abhi Sarvamidam Jagat Mohitam Nabijanati Mam Abhya Param Avyayam. The whole world does not know me. Why? Because they're deluded by the three modes. That's where everybody's at. Whether you're a Lord Brahma or a worm in stool, as Prabhupada would say. And then later in the chapter, he basically says the same thing, that everyone who takes birth here, Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarabhutani Samoham Sargai Yanti Parantapa, that all living entities who take birth are bewildered. They're born into delusion. You know, we're very proud of our high birth. I was born into an aristocratic family or whatever. Krishna's saying, no, you're not. You're born into delusion. That's your position. Completely bewildered by the dualities that arise from desire and hate. That's our position, and it seems hopeless. Now, when we turn to Srimad Bhagavatam, many people will never read Srimad Bhagavatam, even their so-called transcendental aspirants. But if they happen to get this book, volume one, this is printed in mass volume, so we can distribute the very first volume in ordinary book distribution activities. If they only just read the very first verse, we don't have to go very far. We just ask people, can you just read the first verse? And the very first verse serves to put us in our position. Because there's no such thing. How can you aspire, for example, to get out of jail if you don't recognize that you're in jail? How can you aspire to become academically trained, you know, with a big degree, when you don't acknowledge that you're ignorant and uneducated? So, in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva says that this Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects materially motivated religion and only propounds the highest truth. And before that is stated, the first verse is spoken here by Vyasadeva. He glorifies Krishna, accepting him as the Purna Purusha, the complete personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, the summum bonum. And he says about Krishna that by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, you know, a mirage, or land seen on water, a mirage. Raise your hand if you are in a body that is considered below the great sages and demigods. So if the Bhagavatam begins by saying, dear reader, guess what? Even the sages and demigods are completely bewildered and they're in delusion by Krishna. Bewildered by his illusory potency, and that everything they perceive is simply a mirage. Then what to speak of us? So, Vyasadeva has stated that this Srimad Bhagavatam is going to propound the highest truth. So, Jiva Goswami, in his Tattva Sandarbha, he goes to great lengths to argue and prove that Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana. Pramana means evidence. We want to know what is the absolute truth. And people will provide so many types of evidence. Well, this is the absolute truth. That is the absolute. So Jiva Goswami says Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana for revealing the absolute truth. And he explains that the Srimad Bhagavatam was originally spoken in four verses by Lord Krishna into the heart of Brahma. And furthermore, Vyasadeva, the compiler of Srimad Bhagavatam, he not only compiled the Bhagavatam as though this is a reference book, but he himself went into a trance, propelled by his mood of prema bhakti. Vyasadeva, before compiling the Bhagavatam, went into a trance and he saw the absolute truth. He had complete, you know, experience of the absolute truth before he penned the Bhagavatam for us to hear about it. And Prabhupada has numerous times said that your parrot-like repetition of transcendental knowledge is not sufficient. One must speak with realization, not simply like a parrot that repeats what they've heard, or a tape recorder or a CD recorder. You just push the play button and it can very nicely recite transcendental knowledge. Vyasadeva because he understood he was about to undertake this task of compiling the scripture which propounds the highest truth, he went into a trance in which he saw that absolute truth. And then he revealed it through the Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami, in his Tattva Sandarbha, spends some time, after proving that Bhagavatam is the highest pramana, he then spends some time discussing Srila Vyasadeva's trance, which is also discussed here in the seventh chapter of the first canto, when Suta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimasharanya, and they inquire about Vyasadeva and Shukadeva, how this all came down to you, who's now speaking it to us. Where did they get their knowledge? So in the canto 1, chapter 7, text number 4 is where the description of Vyasadeva's trance begins. And so Suta Goswami says that Vyasadeva fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service without any tinge of materialism. That means no mental speculation or anything. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead along with his external energy, which was under full control. So Jiva Goswami comments that when he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, he saw him as Purna Purusha, the complete personality, you know, replete with all six opulences, etc. And Jiva Goswami explains that because he saw the Purna Purusha through the process of his linking in the mood of bhakti yoga, he also saw that that Purna Purusha was accompanied by his Sarup Shakti. Just as when one sees the moon, the full moon, one also sees its illumination, its luminosity. So he explains that Vyasadeva saw this, the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his Sarup Shakti, which was like the luminosity is to the moon, inseparable. And he saw the Lord's external energy. And Jiva Goswami says, it's like she was standing at a distance on the other side of the door. Meaning, she, unlike the internal Sarup Shakti, is not intimately consorting with the personality of Godhead, but she stands at a distance. But she was fully under his control. And then in text 5, Suta Goswami continues, due to this external energy, this is what Vyasadeva is seeing, that due to this external energy, the Bahiranga Shakti, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of nature, thinks of himself as a material product. And thus, the living entity undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So constitutionally, the living entity is not a product of the three modes of nature, nor is the living entity even affected by the three modes of material nature. But due to illusion, the living entity identifies with that illusory energy, the three modes of material nature and the products thereof. So Jiva Goswami comments that this is proof that the living entity is actually a unit, a conscious entity, that the living entity is consciousness and is conscious, because it is consciousness which projects itself into other objects. This microphone is not conscious, and therefore it does not project itself and identify itself as this table or something. But due to our consciousness, consciousness is like the illumination from a lamp. A lamp is luminous and it illuminates. So by, you know, projecting its luminosity outward, it illuminates other objects. And it itself is self-illumined. So similarly, the conscious jiva is conscious, and it has the attribute of consciousness. And it, so that consciousness gets projected out, and we identify, that's my car, right? That's my family member. That's my house. That's my bank balance. You know, whatever it is. We project our, only because we project our consciousness into those things. Why is this pair of glasses my glasses? You know, but that pair of glasses is Acharya Nishtha's glasses. I don't say that's mine, because I haven't projected my consciousness into, but I've projected my consciousness, so everybody knows these are mine. So Jiva Goswami is analyzing Vyasadeva's trance, because in his trance he sees the personality of Godhead, the Purna Purusha. He sees the Purna Purusha's Sarup Shakti, internal potency. He sees the Purna Purusha's external potency. He sees the jivas, which are individual units of consciousness. And he sees how the external energy is controlling them. They're put into illusion by that external potency. Then, the description of Vyasadeva's experience. Vyasadeva understood that the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. So Vyasadeva also saw that the living entities who are under the control of the external illusory energy, they can be released from that imprisonment by the linking process of bhakti yoga devotional service, which is Krishna's Sarup Shakti manifesting in the life of that jiva. That through that linking process, the jiva can be extricated from the illusory potency. So Vyasadeva, out of his compassion, therefore compiled this Srimad Bhagavatam to give the science of how the soul can be extricated from matter. And he recognizes and glorifies the fact that simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, the feeling for devotional service at once sprouts up in the heart, and it extinguishes all lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So Vyasadeva was recognizing the service that Krishna's illusory energy performs, because the living entity is never independent. The living entity is always a puppet or instrument in the hand of one of Krishna's illusory potencies. when the living entity does not, with their own volition, accept the path of devotional service, then by default, the living entity is captured by and controlled by the external energy. But Jiva Goswami analyzes Vyasadeva's compassion and notices and explains that Vyasadeva is appreciating, actually, the service of Maya Devi. She has a thankless task, right, of poking the living entity with the three-pronged trident, the three miseries of material life, the adhyatmika miseries arising from the body and mind, the adibhautika miseries arising from other living entities, and the adidaivika miseries arising from the demigods through nature, etc. So her function is to keep poking, put some fire under our seat, to try to motivate us to get out of this muck of material existence. I don't belong here. Why am I suffering? To give us some reason. You know, suffering is good because it gives us a reason to question and to not be complacent. So he also recognizes, though, that the pushing, the very strong pushing of the Mahamaya is not sufficient to completely liberate the living entity. That pushing of Mahamaya can only bring the living entity to the point of desiring moksha. And we see many, many people today, they're so fried with material life. I mean, they're like fried to the max. And what is their, what point do they come to? Oh, I want out of here, you know? So their idea of moksha or liberation is, let me take my own life, right? Suicide rates keep increasing. Or let me just like drown myself with intoxication, try to like almost numb, you know, make myself comfortably numb so there's no experience. Let's go party. Come on, man, let's go party and make ourselves comfortably numb. Or people get attracted to Buddhism. How many students we meet on campus? Oh, cool, is that like Buddhism? I'm into Buddhism, or I'm a Buddhist, whatever that means. Because in Buddhism, the idea is suffering is not experienced by the senses. Suffering is not experienced by the mind or the intellect, but suffering is experienced by consciousness. So if I eliminate consciousness, then I don't have to experience suffering. Isn't that a logical conclusion? Prabhupada compares it to, oh, my eye is really diseased and it's causing me lots of pain. You know, it has some infection. How will I get rid of this pain and difficulty? Oh, I'll just pluck out my eye. Is that a very intelligent and logical conclusion? No, you go to the doctor and you remedy the eye and put it back in its healthy position. So similarly, the Shunyavadis, the Buddhists, they think that the solution to suffering is to annihilate consciousness. So many people today have come to the point by the very excellent and expert pushings and pokings of Mahamaya, they've come to the point of recognizing, I gotta get out of here. You know, and even if they take to religion, it's with this motive. My dear Lord, please save me from my sins. Please award me salvation. So Vyasadeva recognizes that this material energy is pushing the living entity. But then he also recognizes that there's another potency, also an illusory potency, the Sarup Shakti, the Antaranga Shakti, which is pulling the living entity or attracting, like a magnet will attract iron filings. And Kapiladeva in the third canto, he also says that in the association of devotees, discussions of the Lord's pastimes and qualities and form bring pleasure and satisfaction to those who engage in hearing these things. And that by this hearing, the living entity becomes attracted. And this attraction then matures to the point where that living entity is liberated from the material clutches and situated in his own real position. So like that, our process is not like the Buddhist's process or the Mayavadi's process to just try to run away from material illusion. But our process, as Kapiladeva explains in the third canto, and as Vyasadeva was also noticing, that simply by giving oral reception to this Srimad Bhagavatam, you don't have to worry about the external energy. Put your faith in the process of hearing. Because simply by hearing this Srimad Bhagavatam, at once, the feeling for loving devotion will sprout up in the heart. And by that positive act of proper reception of Srimad Bhagavatam, when that devotional service, that feeling for loving service sprouts up in the heart, then at once, concomitantly, all lamentation, all illusion, and all fearfulness will be extinguished. Just like if you turn on the light, concomitantly, the darkness has been eliminated. One does not have to make an extraneous effort, an extra effort to turn off the darkness. Let's annihilate darkness. And then, you know, when we've done that sufficient, then we can invite light. No, you just turn on the light and the darkness is gone. So in today's verses from the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, we were hearing how the cowherd boys are totally in illusion. They don't even perceive that a year went by. They think a microsecond went by. And one might say, well, gosh, they're an illusion too. So the lesson is, the living entity is always under illusion. The living entity is never in the position of independence. Never. Ever. There's no third position. You're either under the illusion of the Mahamaya or you're under the illusion of Yogamaya. There's no third alternative. So we get to make that choice, and that's where free will comes in. Free will is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My dear Lord Krishna, from this moment, I am yours. I put myself under the care and shelter of your Daivi Shakti, of your Yoga Maya. My dear Radharani, please control me. So this is the perfection of the soul, and this is what we see in Krishna's pastimes. When we read the 10th canto, it's to give us an appreciation of how the Vrajabhasis are so perfect in their being puppets in the hands of Yogamaya. They have no doubts or misgivings. They don't lack any trust. But we're not there because we have not yet trusted Krishna. Seventh chapter, text 14 of Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharatyaya Mam Eva Ye Prapadyante Mayame Tam Tarantite. Arjuna, just surrender unto me and you will be free from the control of the three modes of material nature. You'll be under the control of my internal potency. But we lack that trust because we still harbor this wishful thinking that I can be independent. So we should read the 10th canto and very much meditate on the blissful position of the Vrajabhasis, who are so more than willing to always be under the control of Krishna's yoga maya. And in this way, Krishna's always protecting them, just like he protected the cowherd boys from any suffering. No way, Lord Brahma, are you going to make my sakas feel miserable for a year. I'm going to use my illusory potency to make them think, oh, it was just a microsecond. So we'll stop there, see if there's any discussion. Is there a microphone? Prabhu, you wanted to say something? You wanted to say something?
I'm just remembering, it's just nice to refresh how Lord Brahma, right in the beginning of the chapter, his prayers in the first few verses, emphasized that this process after he was saying that he couldn't understand this form of Krishna. And in the third verse, he's saying that anyone can by, I'll just read the section here, by throwing away the speculation about what is the Supreme, what is the nature of the Supreme, with their body, words, and mind, if they offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, and this hit me very hard, and dedicating their lives to this process of regularly hearing these topics which are vibrated by you personally, Krishna, and by your devotees. In this way they can conquer you, means conquer over the Mahamaya and enter under the shelter of Yogamaya and actually understand Krishna, be free from the unwanted illusion, this forgetfulness that is impossible to overcome. So, you know, that's our position too, and that's what Prabhupada is training us to dedicate our lives to regularly hearing, and then then it's
later in the 10th canto
conquers Krishna. It attracts Krishna's mercy to descend the internal potency.
Later in the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit Maharaj, having heard these human-like pastimes of Krishna, these very attractive, endearing, human-like pastimes of Krishna, one must then dedicate themselves to Krishna. If we're hearing the pastimes of Krishna, but we're not then, dedicating ourselves to his service, that means we haven't actually heard. We're hearing with these things called ears. Maybe we're even kind of hearing with our intellect, but we haven't really heard deep down in the heart where the effect actually takes place. So deep hearing. Paramakaruna Prabhu.
For the wonderful class. Just want to share, even before reading Tattva Sandarbha, this 7, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This verse makes so much sense to me that when I read this verse first time, that this is what I was looking for. And the same verse came in Tattva Sandarbha again and again, and it was like so much powerful way. It's like reading the 10th canto. So my question now is that he was meditating Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Pranahiti Amale Apashat Purusham Purusham. What is that? Maya Tada Apashram. So he sees the Maya in the distance, and he saw that because of this Maya, the people are suffering and are bewildered. And did he found in meditation that even though they are poor, by hearing Krishna's glories and activities, they can overcome the Maya? And did he really got realization in the meditation, and then he compiled Bhagavatam? That means Krishna revealed to him that, oh, you should write Bhagavatam? Or how did he get inclination to write Bhagavatam?
Vyasadeva first compiled the Puranas, including the Bhagavat Purana, in short form. And he felt despondent that something's missing. I'm not feeling that joy in my heart that I should feel if I've fully satisfied the Lord with my seva. So then we know Narada Muni comes and says, "My dear Vyasadeva, you have not properly and fully highlighted and spotlighted Krishna's Vraj Leela. You've kind of fallen short. So how can people be satisfied not getting that full picture?" So then Vyasadeva, you know, accepted the words of his spiritual master, Narada Muni, and he then compiles the Srimad Bhagavatam in the more full form that we have it, and he does go into trance to see all that. And Jiva Goswami says, because the first 7.4 says, in bhakti yogena, he was linking through bhakti yoga, that he was seeing Krishna's Leela.
Love question. So, in the fourth chapter, Vyasadeva haven't met Narada Muni. What I understand is that Bhakti Yoga in Manasi, by Bhakti Yoga meditation, he compiled Bhagavad Purana. Tattva Sandarbha says that he didn't compile actual Srimad Bhagavatam for the people in general. He must have compiled a huge Purana, right? Am I right or wrong?
You're talking about the chronology? You're asking about the chronology?
No, I'm saying that initially when he compiled Bhagavatam, it was not this abridged Bhagavatam, this 7, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 verse. He told that Anartha Upasham Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Dakshade Lokashava Janande Dvan Chakrasatana Samhitam. So what I understand is Chakrasatana Samhitam is the big Purana, because Narad Muni come to Vyasadeva in the fifth chapter, not in the fourth chapter. So when he compiled Bhagavatam, he should not be feeling dissatisfied. So he should be feeling dissatisfied because Narada Muni told him. But what we are understanding in fourth chapter, he is feeling dissatisfaction looking at that anartha upsamam shakshat yaya sammohito jiva, that all they are bewildered. But in the fifth chapter, the bewilderment was he has not described Krishna enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I understand, and according to Tattva Sandarbha, correct me if I'm wrong, that initially when he compiled Bhagavatam was a full whole version of Bhagavatam, and in the then the second bewilderment was, hey, he didn't describe Krishna enough, and that's why he compiled another Bhagavatam. Does it make sense, or mm-hmm. I'm thinking the wrong
mm-hmm.
way?
Yeah, but didn't I say that? I'm sorry. Didn't I say that? that he compiled first the Bhagavat Purana, and then he still wasn't satisfied. Yeah. Bhagavat Purana was all the Puranas he did. All the Puranas, including Bhagavat Purana. But he wasn't satisfied. And Narada Muni said, because you fell short. You didn't properly glorify Krishna's Vraj Leela. So then there was a revision to the Srimad Bhagavatam that we have. And I read an article where it was said that devotee did research that in every Kali Yuga, Shaktivesh avatar called Vyasadeva will compile the Puranas, including Bhagavat Purana. But in this Kali Yuga, which is the Kali Yuga that follows the appearance of Krishna on earth, and the Kali Yuga in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, that Vyasadeva is not simply a Shaktivesh avatar, Jiva, but is actually the Supreme Lord himself. And in this Kali Yuga is where we get this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a little upgraded version, you might say, of Bhagavat Purana, where the Prema Sankirtan is going to be revealed, you know, and Krishna's Vraj Leela is fully revealed. So we're in a very special Kali Yuga with a very special Vyasadeva, with a very special Srimad Bhagavatam, apparently. Right, in this Kali Yuga, he's Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. He's none other than Krishna taking the role of Vyasadeva.
When you quoted the verse, the Srimad Bhagavatam 111, and you showed that, you told that just showing this verse to the people in the book distribution, honestly, it made me feel uncomfortable to show this verse. I'm very honest. What I really show the verse is number 2. Dhammaprojita Kaitavya, that make them, oh yeah. But showing Krishna immediately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything.
No, I wasn't saying that we show them that verse.
No, you don't.
We were saying that once they take the book home and they start reading it, that is the first verse they're going to read, and they're going to get the medicine right from the start, you know. Just like Krishna, he didn't begin his instructions to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita until he smashed him. You're a fool. You're speaking like this big educated Aryan, you know, and you're just a nonsense ordinary person because you're lamenting over things that aren't worth lamenting. You're in the bodily conception of life. How embarrassing is that? You know, so Bhagavatam does the same thing. It starts off by saying, oh, dear reader, you want to read this book? Well, guess what? You're in Maya. You're totally an illusion. Don't think that you're independent and you're going to read this book with your intelligence and figure out the truth. You know, come to the Bhagavatam with the proper mindset. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything out of it. It would practically be a waste of time. And look how big this book is. So we're telling you from the get-go that you're not going to understand it through your intellectual endeavors. So if you really want to enter Bhagavatam, understand your position. And then take off from there. Okay, Acharya Nishtha Prabhu.
Sometimes I do show that verse for people who are really interested. When I first read Bhagavatam, the first verse, it was so deep that I just recognized, like, this is the genuine thing that we may have been looking for.
Yeah, it'll depend on the adhikar of the audience, right?
Yeah.
You know, what they can handle.
So it's kind of a comment or a question. It's not so expertly woven together, but see, Prabhupada said that Krishna wants us back more than we want to go back. So then I'm just reflecting that the main bondage is attachment, material attachment, and attachment is generally not to objects so much as it is to persons. As I mentioned, I visited my family the past few days, and I got to experience to see firsthand how attachment to persons or materialistic persons who are affected by that external energy, that will bind us more than anything. And they're either knowingly or unknowingly under the influence of this illusory potency. So that is so overwhelming that it covers the desire to even want to go back to God. That foolish people, they want to stay here. Why? Because of relationships. I don't want to leave this person or that person. That's like, so that's just the power of Maya, how she's mm-hmm. whipping them in any shape or form up to their ultimate, up to our ultimate perfection. Maya is going to be offering all of these challenges and tests to see, are you ready to just surrender mm-hmm. unto me mm-hmm. and come back?
And it's in, not...
Okay. Interestingly, that is their best interest. But the Maya Shakti is so much that they're not willing to give up that attachment.
So even us aspiring devotees, even we become advanced sadhakas, you know, all the way to the level of asakti, even we enter bhava bhakti. We were discussing Sunday evening about Queen Kunti. What an amazing devotee. We wish we could be one-tenth of what she is, right? And yet, there was one obstacle left in her progression, her advancement. And she was so transcendentally intelligent that she recognized it without somebody having to point it out to her. And she then turns to Krishna as he's about to leave and says, I just have one request before you leave. We all have our little list of things that we come in front of the deities and pray for. She said, I have just one desire, that I beg that you sever the ties of family affection from my heart. Even her family members are devotees, Krishna's associates, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, Shurasen's dynasty in Dwarka, the Vrishnis, who Krishna is about to return to. And she's feeling some dilemma that if I ask Krishna to stay, then my biological family, the Vrishnis in Dwarka, they're going to be bereft of Krishna's association. I don't want my family to suffer like that. But if I give Krishna permission to leave, then my biological family over here, my sons, Pandavas, then they'll suffer from being bereft of his association. So she realized this family attachment is preventing me from just surrendering to what Krishna wants. I'm coming with my demand, and I don't want to make a demand. So therefore, Krishna, I'm not going to ask you to stay or go. Instead, I'm going to ask you to sever the ties of my family affections and just let my attention go only to you and nobody else. And Prabhupada explains in the purport of that first prayer that one cannot be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee unless one completely severs the ties of material of family completely severs the ties of family affection. If we want to be a perfected devotee. So we're all going to be faced with that challenge. And we're not going to be able to do it until we recognize it. It's easy to run around thinking, I don't have any ties, you know. But then when you go visit those people or somehow get their association, then you start to see, oh, wait, I do have attachment over here or affection over here. Anyway, we did a whole class on that on Sunday. But yeah, so the material energy is our friend, although she's beating us like anything. It's to push us to Krishna. And then the spiritual energy, Yoga Maya, is attracting us to Krishna. And we're not doing anything. We're just either like saying no to Yoga Maya, or we're saying no to Mahamaya. You just get to choose who you say no to. So please say no to Mahamaya instead of saying no to Yoga Maya. Okay, we've gone over time, so we might have to stop there. Is that all right? Okay, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.